Good morning to you. I'm Veronica Rickert, sitting in today for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hoping you're done with the shoveling part of your morning and on to something a little bit less strenuous. We are in our winter membership drive here at Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm joined by Jean Purcell this morning. We're going to be talking with you about that in just a moment. But first, I want to stop and take a moment to tell you a little bit about Kathleen Dunn. Of course, normally you'd be expecting to hear her voice right now. She is at home recovering. You may have heard this. We talked about it a little bit earlier in the week. But in case you haven't heard, she is at home recovering from heart surgery. The outlook is good, and we're so happy about that. And we expect perhaps to have her back by the end of the month. So just wanted to update you on that, and we wish her all the best and look forward to having her back on this side of the mic. In the meantime, our winter membership drive is happening. Jean Purcell, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I would love to. First of all, that is good news about Kathleen, and get well soon. In the meantime, we do have our winter pledge drive underway. Today is day one of our February drive, and here's how you can make a pledge. Go online at WPR.org, or you can give us a call at 800-383-9772. Our goal for this hour is $3,000, and we're going to need every single one of you to make a call right now to help us get there. 800-383-9772. Lots of reasons to make a pledge. And I think the biggest of all, Veronica, is the programming just like this that you enjoy every day on Wisconsin Public Radio.
That's right. That's why you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. That's why you listen at 9 o'clock and 10 o'clock to these particular hours. The programming is something you've really come to rely and depend on and enjoy. It's become part of your day, and we'll be getting to that programming very soon here. Just with you a few minutes, we're going to be talking with guest Earl Hutchinson about the Barack Obama race for the White House and how much race and ethnicity is going to factor into that. Just an example of the fine programming you hear all the weekdays, every day on Wisconsin Public Radio here. But we do need you to take action right now and get us primed for that interview coming up with your pledge. We do appreciate it at 1-800-383-9772 or go to the website. That's another easy way to do it, WPR.org.
Pledging is an easy thing to do. You make the decision to give. You think about the value that Wisconsin Public Radio plays in your life, the amount of time you spend with it. You decide how much you would like to contribute. What's it worth? What can your budget stand, frankly? And then you make the call, or you go online at WPR.org. Give us a call at 800-383-9772. It's easy to do, and any amount makes you a member. If you pledge $60, if you pledge $1,000, you are a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. Whatever is comfortable for you is welcome, and it's appreciated. But what we really need for you to do right now is to make that call. 800-383-9772.
1-800-383-9772 is the number to call. We can guarantee you'll have a pleasant experience when you do call. We've got our friendly volunteers standing by in Pledge Central right now. The beginning part, of course, is up to you. You have to take this moment. You have to seize the day and decide to become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio because you listen and because it's important to you. And once you're doing it, let me just tell you what to expect. Once you've gotten to that phone, you can call up, and it just takes a few minutes to go through and answer some questions from our volunteers and decide how much you'd like to pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. And decide how you'd like to do it. You can do it all at once or in monthly installments. You can use a credit card or debit card. You can become a sustaining partner with an ongoing monthly gift via electronic funds transfer or credit card. So it's really quite easy. We try to make it as easy as possible for you. And then you'll be on your way. And when you turn on the radio the next time, it'll be something you'll feel pretty good about. But the important thing is to make that decision. Make the decision now to become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. 1-800-383-9772, the number to call, of course online at WPR.org.
We've got a $3,000 goal this hour, and I have to say we're doing pretty well so far. Keep those calls coming at 800-383-9772. You listen to the Wisconsin Public Radio. This station has a history of being listener-supported. In fact, listener support is our most reliable and our most important source of funding, and we ask you to help pay for the service that you use. 800-383-9772. It's easy to do, takes just a few short minutes, and you'll help us meet our goal and stay on track for this entire pledge drive.
Well, Gene Purcell, thanks for being with me this hour, and we'll be talking with you a bit later, so catch you back then. In the meantime, we're going to start talking to our guests this hour, the kind of programming that you've come to depend on and that you enjoy so much here on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with Earl Hutchinson. His book is The Ethnic Presidency, How Race Decides the Race to the White House. Barack Obama has been described as a movement as much as a candidate, precisely because he's making history. And the world is watching to see what happens when we step outside the known in American politics. Our guest today, Earl Hutchinson, says whether or not we're openly talking about it, race has everything to do with who gets handed the keys to the White House next fall. And whether or not Obama does get the nomination, his run will serve as a reminder that barriers are broken every day. We're joined now by Earl Hutchinson, journalist, political analyst, of course, author of the book, The Ethnic Presidency, How Race Decides the Race to the White House. And we welcome your calls today as well. Tell us what the Obama candidacy means to you at 1-800-642-1234. The regular call-in number at 1-800-642-1234. And Earl Hutchinson, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
My pleasure.
I want to start with your words that whether or not Barack Obama wins this nomination, his run will serve as a reminder that barriers are broken every day. And I know that the last chapter isn't written yet, not even close, but can you try to put into words what you think Obama will mean to American politics?
Well, I heard you use the term movement, and I think that's an apt description to describe Obama. When you really look at Barack Obama, he's really relatively new on the national political scene. Before, 2 months earlier, many people were asking the question, well, who is Barack Obama? We hear the name. We have a faint memory of a speech that was made, a very stirring speech that was made at the Democratic National Convention in 2004. We know he certainly is in the U.S. Senate, the only African American in the U.S. Senate. But beyond that, I mean, who is this Barack Obama? What are his positions on the issues? Where does he stand on everything from health care to national security and, of course, the Iraq War? We are impressed. Many people see him, and they wonder even about his background. We hear about his multiracial background, his father from Kenya, a Caucasian mother from Kansas. He seems to almost be almost Hollywood scripted, a Hollywood casting, a casting call. So all of these things were question marks before a month or so ago. But now, as we well know, there's been a national surge in popularity. Certainly, he's almost a household name now. But even more importantly than that, stepping away from the Democratic contest between he and Hillary Clinton, he's almost emblematic in many ways of America, a changing America. I do make the point in the book that when you look at the social and political tapestry in America, it's changing. The demographics of America are changing. We certainly saw on Super Tuesday in California, where I am, New York, the western states. Traditionally, these states were very, very sparsely populated by Latinos, and certainly they made up a very small percentage of the vote. Well, that's changed. African Americans in the South, we saw the decisive role they played in several states, heavily supporting Barack Obama. So the demographics, the ethnic demographics of America are changing. It is becoming a multi-ethnic, multi-racial country.
Is that, do you think, why he's creating such a buzz the world over? There's tremendous international interest in Barack Obama. Do you think what you just said there, his multiracial face, is something that is intriguing the rest of the world?
Yes, because it's right for the times. It just fits in the shape of the world, the changing ethnic dynamic of the world, the demographics of the world, the power shifts in the world, whether we're looking at the Middle East, whether we're looking at China, whether we're looking at Latin America. We know all the things that are happening in terms of the economic shifts in the world. In other words, the globalization of the economy. And it fits in with the multi-ethnic, multi-racialism shift that we're seeing in the United States. So Barack Obama, 4 years earlier, I don't think he would have had the same resonance or the same buzz or the same reverberation. But in 2008, he's right for the time. So he has captivated the imagination of the American voter. In fact, even beyond America, as you pointed out, just one aside, in Kenya, there was more intensity because of his father. There was more intensity on the part of the Kenyans, even though they're having huge problems there, as we know now politically and economically. intently watching the U.S. Super Tuesday primaries. So it is global. And Barack Obama, I would even go a step further. If he was not in the race, I'm not even sure we'd be talking now. And I'm not sure thousands, perhaps millions of other people would be talking. I mean, stirred, energized. He has, in fact, energized a political dynamic in America.
Well, I was struck by something you said earlier, that Barack Obama has become a household name. Just consider that a moment, the unlikeliness of a name that sounds that different from George Washington being a household name, a real contender for the White House, not a Jesse Jackson even, but a Barack Obama. That seems to signal a huge shift.
Well, absolutely. As a matter of fact, funny thing, some months ago, in fact, the early part of last year, we happened to, myself and some friends, were watching ESPN, and Barack Obama, for some reason or another, the sports network, he came on. There was a clip. And these are sports jocks, and they said, he has no chance. He needs to be John Smith. He's got the wrong name. So we laughed about it at the time, and I said, well, maybe there is something to it. Is America really ready for, forget him, the name, Barack Obama, which, as we well know, and he's been hit with this, are you a Muslim? Did you swear on the Quran? And so there's innuendos about that, too. But the point is, that was almost a year ago when that crack was made, but no one is laughing about his name now.
That's right. In fact, I've noticed, I've been watching the various political coverage, of course, and I have to say, aside from John McCain, Obama seems the most chantable name. It seems to lend itself pretty well to politics.
Well, you know, you say Obama mania. I don't know if you can say McCain mania.
It's a little harder. Well, I wonder, your book is called The Ethnic Presidency, How Race Decides the Race to the White House. What aren't we talking about in terms of an Obama presidency? Is there, as some people have suggested, an elephant on the table in terms of race?
Well, it is on the table. If I could back it up 1 second. Actually, the book was in a book in progress, or a work in progress. It came out of a series of columns, because my nationally syndicated column is carried in about 100 newspapers around the country. It was actually looking at different dynamics of how race and ethnicity plays into the presidential race. And actually, it started in 2005. I wasn't really focusing on Barack Obama at the time. Mm-hmm. I was focusing on 50 years of presidential contests where race has been a subtext, going all the way back to the Johnson-Goldwater matchup in 1964, where Goldwater talked about states' rights and went to the South, and, you know, through the Carter years, the Reagan years, obviously the Clinton and Bush years. So it was really a walk through how there's always been a subtext of race and ethnicity. In a lot of ways, it has oftentimes colored and sometimes discolored the presidential contest. So Barack Obama fits right in with that, even more directly, because unlike in the past where it was much more subtle sometimes, in this case, it's in your face. It's in America's face. Now, the intriguing thing about Barack Obama, a major part of his success is, as we well know, even though he doesn't deny race, even though he mentions many times, I was a poverty organizer on the South Side of Chicago, you know, I've had civil rights credentials as a civil rights lawyer. He talks about that. He doesn't run away from it. But the sense is he's bigger than that, quote unquote, that he almost, if I can use his term, is race neutral. We hear many people say, well, I don't see him as an African American. Well, he is, and he doesn't deny that or run away from it. But the point is, he's broad in the sense of, I have a universal reach of issues that I want to emphasize, particularly change.
It certainly seems like that in when you talk about it in the coverage and the response that he's getting. Then, on the other hand, you look at how the voting has broken down in terms of the primaries and the caucuses, and you've got Hillary Clinton walking away with the lion's share of the Hispanic vote, Barack Obama garnering a huge share of the black vote, and the voting numbers in terms of black voters has been skyrocketing. Mm-hmm. And then there's the white vote, and you wonder, no one's quite sure how that's going to play out yet.
Well, actually, we're seeing some indications, at least in the early stages of the campaign. Remember, this is just the primary season. Nothing's been decided on the Democratic side, and technically, nothing's been decided on the Republican side. So when we look at South Carolina, for example, and even Iowa, Iowa did show one thing. There were many African Americans that were very skeptical about Barack Obama, even wary of him, and primarily, can he win? Is he for real? Well, Iowa dispelled that, because they're one of the whitest states, we did see certainly the victory that he got there, and he did it with white votes. So there didn't seem to be a barrier there to whites, particularly young whites, voting for an African-American. Now we shift to South Carolina, even more interesting. Early polls before the South Carolina primary showed Barack Obama getting about 10% of the white vote in South Carolina, the white Democratic vote. Well, he did better than that. In fact, much better. He got about 25%. Exit polls were showing on Super Tuesday that he got about 2 out of 5 white votes. He did a little bit better with white males, even than Hillary Clinton. That might be another issue about gender. But nonetheless, he did better. So that broke another barrier and dispelled another myth. So we're seeing now, at least in the primaries, and we have to be careful about that, it's only the primaries, and he's only matching up against Hillary Clinton. At this point in time, he seems to be a transitional candidate that's smashing all the racial and ethnic barriers, with the exception of the Latino vote.
We're talking this hour with Earl Hutchinson. He's a journalist, political analyst, and the author of the book, The Ethnic Presidency, How Race Decides the Race to the White House. I hope you'll join in with your comments this hour and tell us what the Obama campaign has meant to you. Do you see him as a movement? Do you see his campaign as a movement as much as the selling of a political candidate? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickard, in today for Kathleen Dunn, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. When it comes to politics, the divide isn't just between red states and blue states. Sometimes it's just as far as across the dining room table. After one on Talk of the Nation, Neal Conan talks with guests who have many things in common, but politics isn't one of them. What's the conversation like at your dinner table? That's at 1 o'clock on Talk of the Nation. Veronica Rickert, back with you. I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're talking right now with Earl Hutchinson. He's a journalist, political analyst, and author of the book, The Ethnic Presidency, How Race Decides the Race to the White House. Talking about the Obama candidacy right now, and we've been using the phrase smashing through barriers. Is that how it's shaking down to you? Is that how you see the Obama candidacy? And are you surprised at the traction the campaign is getting and the interest it's generating? Earl Hutchinson, we have lots of folks on the line waiting to talk to you, so let's go ahead and take a call from Chris in La Crosse. Hi, Chris, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. The one thing, I guess, that has really surprised me is that so many people are putting the emphasis on ethnicity or on, you know, Barack Obama's, you know, being of a different color, and really, he shows leadership that we haven't seen and vision since that of JFK, and I don't think it really has anything to do with race. I think he's the right person for the right time, and it just seems as though our country is in such a dire need for someone who can show us a vision of where we need to be at and not just show us more of the same.
Thank you for that call, Chris. And Chris, they're echoing some of what the Kennedys have said in regard to why they support Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that is certainly what Barack Obama says. I mean, that has been a constant theme on the campaign trail and in his speeches, and every time we've seen his appearances, certainly in the debates, he has a mantra: change, 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 a directional shift in leadership in this country. So, I mean, that's not new. I mean, that's obvious, and that's part of his appeal. But having said that, we still can't deny, as he does not deny, that he is very unique in the sense that through the whole history of this country, those that have provided that change, those that have provided that leadership, those that have provided that directional shift have been white males. So it's not to say that this is emphasized, but we certainly can't minimize the fact that this is something different. He's not just a candidate. He's much more than that. He's a movement. He's unique. He's breaking those barriers, as we said several times, but even more importantly than that, does it strike to the heart of the bigger question? Is America, forget is America ready for a black president, not that. Does it really reflect a profound shift and change in the American mindset about how we deal with gender, how we deal with race, how we deal with ethnicity, if we can put someone in there of a different hue and a different caste and a different a racial or ethnic perspective? Does that person really mean that America has grown up to the point where, as the caller said before, We can look at a person and not see, quote-unquote, a black, a Latino, or a woman. By the way, that question is still dangling in the air, and it still hasn't been answered yet.
I was doing some research for the show last night, and I happened across a fairly vitriolic conservative blog that raised the question whether the support for Barack Obama among white voters was a reflection of white guilt, and whether come Election Day, those same white voters would be able to pull the lever for Barack Obama.
Well, there's a term called the Bradley effect. Now, that's been bandied about for many, many years. And if I could just take a second, those that are not familiar with that, I'm out here in Los Angeles. We had a five-term mayor, African-American mayor. He was the first black mayor in the city of Los Angeles, Tom Bradley. He ran for governor in 1986. Bradley was, and by the way, he was the Barack Obama of his day. He didn't talk race. He talked about issues. He built coalitions with a lot of different ethnic groups and whites. Huge percentage of Jewish voters that backed Tom Bradley. In fact, the joke was he was more not the black mayor, but the Jewish mayor. The point being that Bradley, when he ran for governor, he had a 15 percentage point lead over his white opponent. Many people said, we have no problem with color, we have no problem with Bradley, we love the guy, we'll vote for him, but they didn't. On Election Day, he lost. He went down to a crushing defeat. They coined the Bradley effect, and that is where many whites will tell pollsters and interviewers one thing, but they'll vote something else in the privacy of the voting booth. So far, we haven't seen that with Barack Obama, but you correctly point out one thing. It's still the primary. He's running against Hillary Clinton, who has a lot of negatives, including gender, with a lot of people. What will happen, and this will be the intriguing question, what will happen when he matches up, if he matches up, and he gets a nomination against John McCain?
Do you have any projections there? What do you think?
I think there will be a mixture. I think if we're strictly talking about whites, the white voter, and I don't even hate to generalize on that because even there, I mean, they're, who are you talking about? Young people, old people, middle class, you know, upper class. But just for the sake of conversation, generically, for a second, I think you'll see many that will have a problem. Even though they say we will vote for Barack Obama or we don't have a problem with an African American, at least that's what they tell pollsters. I think if it's up against John McCain and perhaps Mike Huckabee, I think many people will essentially vote for them. But that's not to say they're being duplicitous about race, because in many cases, they might like John McCain. They might like Mike Huckabee. They might like Mitt Romney or whoever the, you know, the other person is with McCain. So we can't always just say it's a racial fudging there. But I think some of that will be there. And I think, by the way, the Barack Obama camp, they've been asked about that. Because it did come up in New Hampshire. There were some questions about the Bradley effect there when he lost and polls showed that he was going to win decisively. And his pollsters and his internal campaign coordinators and also his research analysts have said, we're going to keep a close eye on that possibility.
So they'll be tracking it to see how it shapes up maybe as we go through the rest of these primaries too.
Yes.
Okay, thanks for that call, Chris. And on to Marty in Green Bay. Hi, Marty. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
3 points I want to get across, if I can. First, he is biracial. He's just as much white or Caucasian as he is African. So, and I have a biracial child, so I want to point that out to people. When they say he's black, he's also white, just as much. Second of all, my son just came back from Iraq. He's a Marine. And I had the pleasure of meeting Barack in Milwaukee. And he said he's going to do everything he can to get our kids home. And he is. And I really believe that Hillary isn't going to. We know for sure McCain's definitely not going to. He said he's going to be there 100 years and he's going to bomb Iran. So I think if it comes down to Barack and McCain, it's going to truly be a clear choice of, are we going to stay in this military mode of America or are we going to join the world and be a global peacemaking, and I see Barack as the one bridge that to all cultures. I really am hoping and praying that people will see that and not make this be a race issue. It's who will do the best for our country and also look after the middle class and the poor, and I don't think the Clintons are going to do that. And oh, one more thing. Bill Clinton was bombing Baghdad before we even went to war, so let's not forget this whole mode of, you know, taking what we want, which we've done for so many years, has got to change. So thank you.
Thanks a lot for that call, Marty. And Marty, they're suggesting that she thinks, and well, at least hopes, that it might shake down to positions on Iraq. As I understand it, Iraq, the issue is sort of cooling a bit among voters right now. What's your sense, Earl Hutchinson?
Well, it is. However, it's still there. I mean, as long as we're there, we have a military presence there, it's unresolved, and certainly the casualties are there, and we're spending billions and billions on this war, and she's correct. John McCain has made it clear. I am an extension of George Bush. We're going to finish it off. We're going to stay there until the job is done, whatever that job is, how they define it. And I think that does have a negative resonance with literally millions of voters in this country. On the other hand, having said that, the other possibility is if Iraq is not, this is only February, we've got a lot of campaign left, we've got a lot of time between now and November, a lot of things can happen. Polls are showing, concerns are showing that Iraq is sliding way down on the scale of public concern as a hot button issue, as is the war on terrorism. It's receding from public consciousness, at least overt public consciousness. The economy, people are worried now, will I have a job? Will I have decent wages? Will I be able to have a house even? Will I be able to pay my rent, my mortgage? Will I be able to put my kids through school? In other words, what Bill Clinton said and other presidents have said over and over again, it's the economy, stupid. That is the thing that's driving people now. So we don't know with Barack, McCain, Hillary, or even Mitt Romney, still in the race, and Huckabee, we haven't been clear exactly what they're going to do, in fact, to save homes, revive the economy, put money back in folks' pocket, things that people are concerned about. That ultimately will be a pivotal concern for certainly voters, and I think it will determine the shape of the election.
All right, thanks a lot for that call, Marty. And on we go to Nancy in West Bend. Welcome to the show, Nancy.
Thank you. I think I'm going to sound a little bit like a broken record, but I too feel that the fact that he's biracial is not what his appeal is about. You know, I knew of him as a senator in Illinois before the country knew of him, and then he came on the scene in that huge Democratic convention speech. And I don't think you could have seen that speech without being, you know, just really feel the charisma and be inspired by him. And I don't think it had anything to do with the fact that he's biracial. You know, I know a lot of biracial people, and I don't want them to be president, but I do want Barack Obama to be president. And I think there's a lot of people that have been waiting for this. A lot of African Americans that, you know, are just maybe kind of shocked, and they want this. But, you know, for them, it does feel like, well, you know, he's biracial. I mean, I don't know if that's true. It's a hypothesis. I'm not an African American, and I don't know, you know, what it feels like to be an African American. But I think I definitely think about it differently than an African American, And I definitely, when I'm by myself in the booth, I'll vote for him. That's it.
All right. Thanks a lot for that comment.
Can I comment on that?
Sure, go ahead.
About the biracial part, I think that needs to be commented on vis-a-vis African Americans. I think actually it worked in reverse. One of the reasons that in the early returns it came in polls and surveys and just interviews with many African American voters, they were wary of Barack Obama. They were really wary because you have to remember one thing. When you're talking about race in America, it is has a profound impact on everything, whether we like to admit it or not. And what happened was many African Americans are used to the Jesse Jacksons, the Al Sharptons, the in-your-face kind of, you know, the racial polemic. So now along comes a Barack Obama, who is multiracial, who doesn't sound like, I like this term, post-civil rights African-American leader, who doesn't sound like the Jacksons and the Sharptons, a confrontational, in-your-face, causing turmoil out there on race, playing the race card. So he is something that's different. But really, when you look at it for African-Americans, that bothered them because they're accustomed to heavy race emphasis. So once certainly Barack Obama has established himself as the candidate, a credible candidate, one that can win, Then I think at that point, African-Americans said, okay, we're going to embrace this guy. We don't see a biracial guy here. We see a black man. Everywhere you go, the buzz is, we got to get the brother in the White House. That is the thinking on the street from African-Americans. They're not saying we got to get the biracial guy in there. We got to get the black guy. So I'm just simply saying that is reflective of how many African-Americans are seeing Barack Obama as one of us.
I wonder, Nancy referenced the speech there in the Democratic Convention, and that was, I think, a watershed moment. I remember seeing that. I remember where I was, and I remember the announcer afterwards saying something like, we may have seen the first black president of the United States. Tell me what that moment, what you thought when you saw that.
Well, I felt pride, to be honest with you. You know, I don't really look at the first black president because, you know, to me it's insulting to say that. You know, for all the reasons that people are supporting Barack Obama, which have nothing to do with race. I mean, change, leadership, a new direction. I think those are critical and decisive things that ultimately weigh into a voter's decision about whether they're going to support a candidate or not, whether he really reflects in a broad sense all their concerns, domestic and foreign policy. But I think we still can't minimize with many African Americans. There is a sense of pride there that we can make history. We hear that term bandied about over and over again. This is historic. Well, it is historic. When you look at the whole history of this country and who's run this country, it is historic. It's undeniable. You know, if Barack moves past the primaries, gets the nomination, and perhaps beyond, I think African Americans would stick their chest out and puff themselves up and say, we finally did it. Whether that means that the country has finally did it or not, that's another question. But I think certainly the sense on the part of many African Americans is, yes, we take pride in this man. If I could just say one other thing.
Mm-hmm.
In my household, let me personalize it a little bit more. In my household, there was a vote split, and I'm going to say this. There was a vote split. My wife, who is African American, she said, I'm voting for Barack Obama. And the reason being, even though she loved Hillary as a woman, she appreciated many of her positions and really, you know, really endeared herself to her. But she said, I got to go with him. I didn't for another reason. But nonetheless, having said that, she was reflective of what I heard from so many African Americans during the primary in California the last few days. It was almost like messianic that we have to vote for this man. And if you even had a thought about voting for someone else, you're a traitor.
Hmm. So has that created problems in your household? Or
No, we don't talk politics. We keep it neutral.
Someone once told me you should never talk about politics, religion, or sex with anyone but your family.
And you know what? I adhere to that.
Sometimes even in your own house.
Huh? Exactly.
Well, I want to talk a little bit before I let you go about the generational factor here on the Obama campaign, but we're going to take a quick break first. We're talking with Earl Hutchinson. He is a journalist, political analyst, and author of the book, The Ethnic Presidency, How Race Decides the Race to the White House. We thank you for your calls. We probably won't have any more time for them, but we do want to continue with Earl Hutchinson and follow up on that one issue. So we thank you for that. And then we'll be talking more about our winter membership drive. Stay with us. I'm Veronica Rickert, sitting in today for Kathleen Dunn, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. At 12:30 on Chapter a Day, Jim Fleming reads from American Creation, Triumphs and Tragedies at the Founding of the Republic by Joseph J. Ellis. Veronica Rickert back with you today. I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we've been talking about the Obama campaign with Earl Hutchinson. He is a journalist, political analyst, and the author of the book, The Ethnic Presidency. And Earl Hutchinson, I want to ask you about something we haven't really touched on yet, is what seems to be a huge groundswell among younger voters for Barack Obama. And he himself has explained this by saying that these younger voters, and he includes himself in sort of the next generation, are voters who do not see politics as framed by the old arguments from the 60s. We're looking at a new political model here. Do you see that?
Yes, I do. And I think that's part of the appeal of Barack Obama. Obviously, many people see him. We even look at him. He looks young. It looks like he just stepped out of kindergarten, practically. So you can identify with someone like him. He is my peer, my age group. He certainly has fired up and energized, captured the imagination of many young people. We saw it in Iowa. We saw it out here in California. We've seen it in just about every state, and I think we'll continue to see it in the fall. He's almost got a kiddie core behind him. Now, there's one problem there. Actually, two problems. One, young people are critically important in many ways because they're the next generation of leaders, and certainly we want them influenced by ideas, thinking about public policy, and getting engaged in it. On the other hand, the 17 to 29 age group, they're about 14 to 15% of American voters, and they're spread all over the place. They're notoriously fickle. First problem is the percentages are small, despite what many people think. They're not the giant force that people think they are in terms of numbers and percentages. The second part is the fickleness. Young people traditionally don't vote. They're turned off. They're alienated. They're frustrated. They don't see this as a political process that has anything to offer them. And Barack, when he said that, yes, it does. And we're going to engage you in it because, you know, these issues impact on you, too. No matter what, whether you're talking about everything from the Iraq, I mean, 18 and 19-year-olds go over there, to health care. 18 and 19-year-olds get sick, too, and die. So all of these things you should be involved with and engaged with. So on the one hand, he's right. He's on to something because of who he is. He can energize. He can inspire. On the other hand, just from a hard political calculus, they have to be very concerned, the Obama camp and the Democratic Party. Will young people stick around in the fall? It's nice now because he's there and he's fresh, but will they be there in November, October and November? The second thing is, will they come out in sufficient numbers? And certainly if they come out in numbers, will they vote Democratic? So these are concerns. While we certainly don't minimize the importance of young people and the generational split that we do see, and it certainly is going to even be bigger if John McCain is certainly the Republican nominee. But on the other hand, that there are little warning signs here that at the same time youth are important, we don't want to overemphasize youth to the neglect of the other demographics out there. And one of those demographics that I think very few people are talking about that has weighed very heavily in the campaign and certainly will be a presence in the fall, on the flip side of it, older white women. Over 50 years old. We talk about Latinos that have been certainly the bedrock of Hillary Clinton support. Well, another demographic, and they do vote. They're not fickle. Older white women, post-50, middle class, middle income, essentially tracking toward Hillary Clinton. That's another important dynamic. So only bring that up vis-a-vis the youth and the generational split to show there's a lot of groups, a lot of constituencies other than youth, that both Democrats, Barack in this case, or Hillary and McCain and the others, they have to pay attention to.
I'm going to ask you one last question. I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball and tell us, put you on the spot here. What do you see happening between Barack and Obama? Are you going to go out and predict a victor here?
Okay. I will go out on a limb since you ask. I will dust off the crystal ball and get the tarot cards and the Ouija board out. If it comes down to Barack and McCain, it's going to be a battle royal in this sense. 11:59 on November 4th, you will be biting your nails. It will be that close, and I'll tell you why. Two reasons. John McCain, you know, a lot of people are making light of him because of Iraq and Bush and tied to the old guard and the old policies. That's true. But we have to remember, there are millions of people out there that don't think those old policies in the old guard are that bad a thing. On the other hand, we don't know the X factor of race. Will, and I think you brought this up earlier, will that impact in terms of who actually votes for Barack and who doesn't when the deal is down against a traditional, rock-solid, well-financed GOP white male? Betting odds at this point, if the Democrats and Barack can hold their core Democratic constituency, they're more Democrats than Republicans, make big inroads in independence in Ohio and Florida. Democrats, Barack Obama, they win. If they can't, they lose.
Should be an exciting time, huh?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Earl Hutchinson, it's been a real pleasure to talk with you. I appreciate it.
And thank you very much. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Earl Hutchinson, journalist, political analyst, and author of the book, The Ethnic Presidency, How Race Decides the Race to the White House. We want to thank him for that. And again, an example of the powerful guest, thought-provoking topics you hear here on Wisconsin Public Radio. We are going to continue now, pick up with the beginning of our winter membership drive. And I'm joined now again by Jean Purcell here as we ask you to go to the phone now and contribute to shows just like that one, shows that had you calling, shows that had you engaged, shows that had you thinking. That's why you should pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio and why you should go to your telephone right now at 1-800-383-9772 or use the web, WPR.org.
Two great ways to make your contribution to help support the programming you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio, programming you count on. And the past hour, you know, the thing about it is it wasn't a particularly, I don't want to say this in the wrong way, it wasn't a particularly special program. It's very typical of what we do every single day here on the Ideas Network. And so in that sense, it's not special. But if you think about it in the larger scheme of things, it was special because it was a terrific guest, great audience involvement, and a topic that people have a great interest in. And it really tries to add up to what we try to do here every single day. Your dollars, your support, help make that possible at 800-383-9772 or pledge online at WPR.org.
We do have a $3,000 goal this hour that we're looking at, and we have $670 yet to raise.
Ooh,
this
let's
hour.
Go.
We've got about 10 minutes left, and you can help us get there. You can make that first phone call now to help us build on that as we go towards $670 for programming like you just heard, for all the programming you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio that keeps you listening, keeps you talking, keeps you thinking, and really helps you just digest the world around you a little bit better. We break it down for you. We cherry pick. We bring you guests like Earl Hutchinson, the very best of the best, the brightest of the brightest, who really make a difference and help you make sense of the world. That's worth a donation right now, a pledge right now at 1-800-383-9772. And coming back here from the on-air production booth where she's been answering phone calls and talking with Earl Hutchinson is Kathleen Dunn's producer, Rhonda Fanning. Rhonda, thanks for coming over here.
Good morning to you both, and good morning to all the listeners. And let's give that webpage out there, WPR.org. How easy and quick it is to log on and pledge online, or you can call one of our wonderful volunteers at 800-383-9772.
We've got just 10 minutes to go before we wind up this hour, a $3,000 goal, and I have to say, we've had a terrific hour so far, just $670 to go, and that means that every single call we get between now and 10 o'clock is important. Your call, your pledge, any amount, whether it's $60 or $600, makes a difference here at Wisconsin Public Radio, and you can make a difference by making a call at 800-383-9772. And don't forget, you can pledge online. It counts there, too, at WPR.org.
Maybe you'd consider a pledge at the $120 level. If you did want to pledge at that level, we can send you a thank you gift, the Wisconsin Public Radio Member Benefit Card, which is quite popular with our listeners for good reason. It gives you a lot of bang for your buck in terms of your pledge. You get shopping discounts, two nights for the price of one at various bed and breakfasts, two for one admission to cultural attractions, and another great part, two for one entrees at lots of restaurants across Wisconsin. So that's the Member Benefit Card at the $120 level. The important thing to do, though, the reason you make that call is because of the programming. The thank you gift is nice, but we know what you love about Wisconsin Public Radio is the programming. It's why you listen. So call us right now at 800-383-9772.
800-383-9772. Don't forget, any amount makes you a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, and every pledge is appreciated. 800-383-9772. Make that call now. It's easy to do and takes just a very few short minutes.
That's right. Our volunteers will answer any questions that you have if you call 800-383-9772. You'll also have a chance to leave your comments about WPR programming. Those are always fun to read on the air. Or if you'd rather pledge online at WPR.org, you can leave your program comments there, too.
800-383-9772. We've got that $3,000 goal we are working towards. Your call will help us get there. And we need those calls right now, 800-383-9772. And think about this for a minute. If you become a sustaining partner of Wisconsin Public Radio, that means that your pledge of $120 is broken down into a kind of an easy-to-digest $10 a month. Taking out of your checking or your savings account. It's a great way to make a substantial contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio and really not have it impact you too awfully much. So call our volunteers at 800-383-9772 and say, I want to become a sustaining partner of Wisconsin Public Radio, and it'll mean an awful lot to us.
They have adjusted our numbers in Pledge Central. I'm going to go ahead and say
downward.
Downward. We still have, we have over 1,500 of the way to go, actually 1,700 plus. So it becomes even more urgent now.
But we like a challenge,
we
right?
do like yeah. a challenge. And this seems like a good time to ask you to think about how much you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. Think about how much. Think about how much it means to you, how much you talk about it, how much you use it to make sense of the world. And then ask yourself whether you could afford a larger contribution. Perhaps you could afford a contribution, a pledge of $500. Maybe that would be something that would be suitable with your budget and in line with the passion that you feel for Wisconsin Public Radio and how much you use it. We'd be incredibly appreciative of that. And of course, just as you appreciate the programming that we bring you each and every day here on Wisconsin Public Radio, consider a larger gift if you're able at 1-800-383-9772 or go ahead and use the website WPR.org.
Think about the value that WPR adds to your life each and every day. And it is a partnership. Time and again, guests tell me, just this last hour, the guest told me how much fun he had and how great the conversation was. And that's just not a comment about the great hosts that we have here at Wisconsin Public Radio, Veronica and Joy and Kathleen, of course. But that's the callers, the dialogue, the comments, the questions that you bring to the show. So we need to keep that partnership going. Call now. We have about 6 minutes left this hour. We have a long way to go towards that goal, 800-383-9772, or you can log on to WPR.org, save a couple pieces of paper, and it just takes a few minutes.
Indeed, we've got about $1,700 to go in the next 6 minutes, but I have to tell you, I've been in this position before, and we have had our audience come through time and time again, and I have no doubt it'll be different this time. It'll be this. Let me rephrase
Thanks,
that.
Gene.
It'll be the same this time. 800-383-9772. If it's time for you to renew, think about the last time you made your pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. This might be, your year might be up. This would be a good time for that. Or if you've never pledged before, if you've been listening for a year or two or three, or maybe you just discovered Wisconsin Public Radio within the last couple of months, call in now and make a pledge. Help us make that goal. WPR.org is also a way that you can make a pledge as well.
Gene, your faux pas reminds me a bit of a time I was pledging.
Faux pas? What are you talking about?
What faux pas? I was pledging with another person who will remain nameless here at Wisconsin Public Radio, and they urged the listeners to remember caveat emptor, which is, of course, buyer beware, what he meant to say. And what I say to you now is carpe diem.
There you
carpe
go.
Diem. Seize the day. In fact, seize the minute, because we've only got five of them mm-hmm. left in this hour, and we've got $3,000 to raise. We really need to do it, and you can help us get there pledge by pledge, call by call, person by person. You are that person. You need to go to the telephone right now and get us to $3,000 to say thank you for this programming, to help pay for it, and because you listen. It's just the right thing to do, and once you do it, you will feel good about it. You will feel that sense of ownership when you turn on your radio and listen to Kathleen Dunn or myself, and you listen to the fine production by Rhonda Fanning and the amazing guests that she's able to line up, like Earl Hutchinson this morning. So say thank you for that, and we say thank you right back to you at 1-800-383-9772, or go ahead and use the website at WPR.org.
And I would like to thank a couple of people who have called in this hour. Laura from Milwaukee says that she listens to public radio all the time. She listens to a variety of programs, and it's gotten her through a lot of long days. I'm sure that there are a lot of people out there listening at work right now, and we are getting you through those days. David from Verona, he's actually lives in Verona, but he's calling from Ecuador this morning. He's listening while on vacation, and that is so indicative. We hear that all the time. People who have either lived in Wisconsin and move away but can't give up public radio because you just don't have this kind of state public radio in other places in the country. So they continue to listen online each and every day, or people who just have visited here, fell in love with it, and then take it home and share it with friends and family. Call now, 800-383-9772, wherever you may be in the world. That number will work from anywhere, or you can log on to WPR.org.
Well, we've got some good news here. We are making some headway. We're halfway there to our $3,000 goal. Your calls are getting us there. And some other good news, we've gotten five new members, five brand new supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio in just the past hour. And as I say, if you've been thinking about becoming a member, now is the perfect time. We've got just 3 minutes to go, about $1,500 left to raise. Your call could be the one that puts us over the top at WPR.org or 800-383-9772. Lots of people to thank this hour, but a special thanks to those brand new members of Wisconsin Public Radio.
The number to call, 1-800-383-9772. You can make your pledge right there when you go over to your telephone and you decide to support the programming you're listening to, the programming that's become so much a part of your day. Wisconsin Public Radio and programs just like this one make your life brighter. They inform you, they engage you, and as Rhonda was saying just a moment ago, it's more than just a one-way street where we're sitting here in a talking box at you. We invite you to talk with us and with the luminaries and thinkers, poets, writers, analysts right here on the airwaves. It's a two-way street. It's a two-way street all the time, and it's certainly a two-way street with the pledge drive right now. We're talking to you right now, so please give us that call. 1,000 almost to go is what we're looking for. We're looking for about $1,000 there. And you can call us and get us there at 1-800-383-9772. Show us that power of one call, yours.
And that means we're actually under $1,000 now. So one phone call could put us over the top and get us to that $3,000 goal. Here's the phone number, 800-383-9772. We've talked about all the reasons there are to support Wisconsin Public Radio, whether you're talking about the programming, the member benefit card, the great service we provide. Whatever the reasons are, there are lots of them. Now it's time for you to make a call. 800-383-9772 or pledge online at WPR.org.
WPR.org is an easy paper-free way to go, or you can call us at 1-800-383-9772. You can make a card. You can make your pledge on a credit debit card with Visa, MasterCard, American Express, or Discover. You can become a sustaining member with an ongoing monthly gift, electronic funds transfer, or credit card. But make sure you make that phone call right now at 1-800-383-9772.